Hey, everybody, this is Ben Bowman. Welcome back to another episode of the Oregon Bridge.
I think gun safety legislation, whenever bills come up, it definitely draws people out. Moms Demand Action, we understand that in order to have your voice heard, you have to do it in a way that is respectful of all gun owners. We are a nonpartisan organization and we respect the Second Amendment. And I think the messaging that's coming from the opposition is definitely trying to ignite their base in this fear that we are trying to take everyone's guns away. And that's simply not true.
All right, folks, today we have an interview with Hillary Ulig. Alex Titus, a former co-host, is filling in today for Reagan. And Alex and I interviewed Hillary a couple weeks ago. Hillary is the chapter lead for the Oregon chapter of Moms Demand Action. We talk a little bit about that organization, Everytown for Gun Safety. These are two of the most prominent and influential groups on gun safety legislation, not just in Oregon, but across the country. And Hillary is like the representative for the state chapter. And we talk a lot about gun issues on this. And I'll just, as a disclaimer from the beginning, those of you who've listened to the podcast know that Alex is a conservative Republican. So he identifies as pro-gun. That's how he describes himself. He's also a lifetime member of the NRA. So he obviously approaches this from a very different place than both Hillary and I approach the issue. But I think what you'll find is a respectful and interesting and hopefully useful conversation about the state of gun safety in Oregon. We cover a lot of ground. We talk about Measure 114, which is the very prominent ballot measure that passed just narrowly in the last election. So I was looking this up so I could tell it to you all. 50.65% yes, 49.35% no. So 975,000 to 950,000. That was the margin in that race. Narrowly passed. We talk about the status. I'm recording this the day before we post in case anything new broke. It is still on hold because of the reasons we described in this podcast. So interesting conversation on Measure 114. We talk a little bit about gun violence elsewhere. We talk about suicide and the prevalence of using guns for people to commit suicide and what we can do about that. We talk about what's been passed in Oregon and what may be to come moving forward. So to cover a lot of ground, it was hopefully an interesting conversation. And with that, I will get us right into the interview and we look forward to seeing you back here next week. Thanks, everyone.
The attorneys of Harang Long Gary Rudnick, PC, have represented clients in Oregon's political and policymaking arenas for decades. We have worked on some of the most consequential public policy matters in modern Oregon history for both public and private sector clients. We combine strategic savvy with technical expertise to navigate the legal, political, and governmental landscape in pursuit of our clients' goals. To learn more about how Harang Long can help you achieve your goals, go to harang.com. That's harrang.com.
All right. Hillary Ulig, thanks so much for coming on the podcast. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah. Well, you get bonus points because you are recording this with us on a late Friday afternoon. It is already dark outside. So thank you for coming on. We'll talk a little bit about policy. We'll talk a little bit about politics. But first, actually, before we even get to Moms Demand Action, tell us a little bit about yourself. Where do you live in the state? How did you get involved in the political space? Like, what brought you to your current role with Moms Demand Action?
Sure. Well, I live in Hillsborough. I've got two kids. We've been here about 20, 25 years now. And I have always been a voter. And then after the 2016 election, I realized that just voting is not enough. We really need to get involved. We need to do more than just vote to protect our democracy and make sure that our voices are being heard. So shortly after the 2016 election, I helped found an Indivisible group in Hillsborough. And that was really my entryway into understanding politics and state level politics and federal politics and going to town halls and actually talking with legislators. And turns out at the time, my state rep was actually, our kids went to the same preschool 20 years ago. So it was really interesting to reconnect in a new sphere.
For listeners who might not be familiar, probably on Alex's side of the aisle, not our side of the aisle, Indivisible, can you tell us a little bit about that group?
Sure. It was a kind of a grassroots movement that started after Trump was elected in the 2016 election. And it was a way to get people to become civically engaged. And during the Trump administration, there were quite a few things that Indivisible Movement tried to resist or stop from happening. Some we were successful with and some not. But it was really a way for me to encourage other people to become civically active. So that is actually how I found out about Moms Demand Action. I was at a town hall and I kept seeing this woman in a red Moms Demand Action shirt. And I was hosting a forum for community organizations and I was inviting all these different forums to come tell us what they did. And I invited Sherry, who was in this red shirt, to come speak at our forum. And hearing what Moms Demand Action is about really spoke to me. And I realized that that was an organization I really wanted to get more involved with.
That's a perfect transition. So can you tell us a little bit about, so you're the Oregon chapter lead, correct, for Moms Demand Action. Right. So what is the organization? Where did it come from? What does it work on?
Sure. Well, Moms Demand Action, the full name is Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense in America. And it was started by a woman named Shannon Watts the day after the Sandy Hook shooting. She was looking for some way to take action in response to this terrible tragedy. And that was 10 years ago this week. Wow. And in Oregon, that was also just a couple of days after the Clackamas Town Center shooting. So people in Oregon were aware, and then this Sandy Hook tragedy happened. And Shannon Watts was in Indiana. She started a Facebook group and thought that would be, you know, a way for people to come together. But since then, in the past 10 years, we have grown, you know, outgrown a Facebook group, and we've become the largest grassroots gun safety movement in the country. We have more than 10 million supporters across the country. We have a chapter in every state. So we really work for common sense, evidence-based gun safety policies that will really help protect our families and our communities. We've joined forces with, I believe it was 2014, I forget the year, but we joined forces with Mayors Against Illegal Guns to form Every Town for Gun Safety. So that is our umbrella organization. So Every Town encompasses Mayors Against Illegal Guns, Moms Demand Action, Students Demand Action, and the Every Town Survivor Network.
Cool. Gotcha. And then just kind of from a high level, and maybe you don't have the statistic top of mind, but I would be curious, in terms of just kind of gun violence in Oregon in general, is Oregon rate like highly for that compared to, I know obviously there's just like, there's less people in Oregon than somewhere like New York or Texas. So I imagine that the overall numbers are actually lower, but like, is Oregon a particularly violent state? Do you know when it comes to guns, like, is it average? Is it low? Just kind of curious of that in general.
We're pretty average in the middle of the number of states in terms of rate of gun violence, but we have about 500 people who die in Oregon from gun violence every year, which is quite shocking. And I think what people are surprised to learn is that 80% of our gun deaths in Oregon are gun suicides. Mm. So we have a huge gun suicide problem that is affecting many, many people. And those are the gun deaths you don't always hear about. They're not always publicized. They're not put in the papers. There's still a lot of stigma around that. So they are happening all around us. They're affecting our families, our neighbors, our friends, but you may not be hearing about them.
Yeah, I know that's a really good point. I've heard a lot of folks talk about that, especially when it comes to mental health, that there's quite a high number of people proportionally who take their own lives with the use of guns. And I know that's definitely a topic I've heard talked about that doesn't seem to get as much attention. So of course, we recently had Measure 114 pass, but I wanted to kind of take us maybe down memory lane a little bit in terms of kind of the state of gun policy, gun regulation in Oregon before. What did the kind of last 10 years look like of that? Maybe we could start, we don't have to specifically start at 2010, but I think you kind of get what I'm going for. Mm-hmm. And then in terms of that, what are kind of some of the major policies that were passed? What are the ones that maybe Moms Demand Action thinks should have passed but haven't passed yet? Curious of your perspective, just kind of the general landscape when it comes to the policy side of things.
Yeah, well, Every Town for Gun Safety has ranked all of the states according to the strength of their gun laws. And Oregon actually rates 11th, which is pretty good. We've had some really good success in passing some life-saving gun violence prevention policies in the last 10 or so years. Specifically, we passed in 2015 background checks on all gun sales, which is really important to have those background checks in place. In 2017, we passed an extreme risk protection order, also known as a red flag law, which is another way to really keep guns out of the hands of people who are posing a threat to themselves or others. We've closed the boyfriend loophole so that we're sure that people who are convicted of domestic violence and stalking are not allowed to purchase or possess handguns or any guns. So we've had a lot of good work. And the last bill that we really are proud of supporting is the Senate Bill 554, which is a secure storage law. So gun owners are legally required to securely store their firearms. And that also provided certain buildings and sensitive places to prohibit guns, including concealed carry permit guns. Because I think a lot of people are surprised to learn that even in schools, if you have a concealed handgun license, you can take your gun into a school. And so I actually worked with Ben, I think it was just about this time last year, on getting school districts to set policies to make sure that people are aware that you cannot bring your concealed handgun into schools if a district has set that policy.
When I was working in the state legislature, and this was 2015, I think, Val Hoyle was the majority leader, and this was she was the chief sponsor on a bill that basically expanded background checks, the universal background checks bill. And I think including closing the so-called gun show loophole, where you could like basically sell a gun at a gun show and avoid having a background check done. And it was my first introduction to like the politics of gun legislation. What I mean by that is like, if you don't work in the state capitol or actively work on gun issues, when these sorts of bills are introduced, it animates a segment of the population in a way that almost no other policy issues do. So what I mean by that is, in then Majority Leader Hoyle's office, thousands of phone calls flooding the lines, thousands of emails, personal threats against then Representative Hoyle's safety. She was actually, there's an attempted recall against her for pursuing it. So like, obviously this can be a divisive issue with very strong beliefs on both sides, but that's sort of how it shows up in the legislative context, is like tons of people come out of the woodwork to weigh in. And in my own conception, Hillary, I won't speak for you, but I'll kind of let you reflect on this if this resonates. But like, to me, Moms Demand kind of has been created as a, I don't know, counterweight is the right word, but like a group of people that can vocally support policies that other people were vocally opposing. It almost sort of like levels the advocacy playing field a bit. But I'm kind of curious how you perceive of Moms Demand action within the Oregon politics space. Like, what is your role in these hotly contested legislative conversations?
Well, I think you're right. I think gun safety legislation, whenever bills come up, it definitely draws people out. I have walked through groups of opposition on the steps of the Capitol. I've, you know, rubbed elbows and sat in hearing rooms next to opposition with, you know, unpleasant messages that they were conveying. But I think Moms Demand Action, we understand that in order to have your voice heard, you have to do it in a way that is respectful of all gun owners. We are a nonpartisan organization and we respect the Second Amendment. My father was a hunter. He would have a lot to say if he thought I were trying to take everyone's guns away. And I think the messaging that's coming from the opposition is definitely trying to ignite their base in this fear that we are trying to take everyone's guns away. And that's simply not true.
I want to turn now to Measure 114. So I guess the first question, maybe just to level set, is like, what exactly does Measure 114 do, or what is it intended to do? Obviously, right now it is on, who knows what where we'll be when this is published, but for right now it is on hold because of a judge's decision. It is undergoing review. It's not been struck down or anything like that. It's being reviewed and is not being implemented at this time. But what does ballot Measure 114 do?
Simply put, it requires a permit to purchase firearms, which is good for 5 years, and you have to demonstrate that you can securely store and handle and load and fire your firearm before you can get your permit. It requires a completed background check. You mentioned earlier that there is a universal background check or background check on all gun sales in Oregon, except there is this Charleston loophole where if the background check is not completed within 3 days, then the purchaser can be allowed to have the firearm after 3 days. So Measure 114 would require a completed background check, which is really important because most background checks that are not able to be completed within 3 days, usually there's a reason. They are usually rejected four times more often than anyone else's background check. So if a background check is delayed, it's usually because they have to check records out of state or they need to verify certain information to make sure that people who should not be, or people who are prohibited from having access to firearms are not getting those firearms easily. And then the other thing, the other main part of Measure 114 is that it prohibits the sale of high capacity magazines over 10 rounds. And so we know that this has been hotly contested by the opposition, but also we know that high capacity magazines have no place in society. They are designed as a weapon of war to be used to kill as many people as quickly as possible. And that is not something that a hunter needs to be able to do. It is not something that we need to have in everyday life in our communities.
And so the measure prohibits the sale, not the ownership. So if someone already has those magazines, they're allowed to keep them. Is that right?
That's right. They can be used on private property or at shooting ranges, but they are not, no more will be sold.
No more will be sold. My last question, and then I'll hand it over to Alex on Measure 114, is there's a large menu of gun safety policies that could be enacted. There were, I imagine, a series of choices that had to be made when Measure 14 was being put together. Like, what do we want to include? What do we want to leave off? Can you talk a little bit if you're, I'm not sure if you or Moms Demand was like one of the, I think you were one of the primary advocacy groups that was advancing this, but what was the decision making on like, what are we going to include? What are our priorities for this? And are there things that weren't included that you're anticipating will be part of the conversation moving forward?
So Measure 114 was actually put forth by an organization called Lift Every Voice Oregon, or LEVO. And so they rose up as an interfaith group of clergy members and student voices right after the Parkland shooting. And so they have tried to get certain ballot measures put on the ballot for gun safety over the last couple of years. But of course, during the pandemic, it's hard to collect signatures. You know, it was put on hold a little bit until we could get out of the pandemic. And then the summer, particularly after the Uvalde shooting, kind of renewed public interest, the number of signatures were, you know, that people were collecting were huge. And that landed IP-17 at the time on the ballot. Moms Demand Action had volunteers helping to gather signatures, but Lift Every Voice Oregon is really the driving force behind Measure 114.
Cool.
Gotcha. And then, yeah, I know as Ben had said, the news may have changed by the time that we published this, but you know, where does the measure, and there's been, it's even been confusing for me to just kind of track where things are going on because it seemed to be moving so frantically, but where does the measure stand today? Is some of it being enacted? Is some of it on pause? Is all of it on pause? And then what are kind of the next steps? Is it more, well, probably more court cases, I'm assuming, but is it going to go to the legislature? Is it going to try to fix it? Any kind of insights on both where we are today with it, but then also where you think it's going?
I think you've kind of nailed it. It was supposed to take effect December 8th, but the permitting process was not completely ironed out. So they wanted to make sure that that was able to be consistently applied across the state in an equitable and fair manner. So that part got a delay so that we could make sure that that was put in place. And then the various lawsuits that have been, you know, working their way through the process, it is a bit like whiplash. You know, yes, it's good. No, it's stopped. So it's just really hard to sort out. Some lawsuits are just looking at the high capacity magazine part. Other lawsuits are looking at the background check part. So I've honestly lost track this week of which parts are being addressed in different lawsuits. But as of right now, it's my understanding that the entire law is on hold, but the permitting process is still, you know, getting worked out. So the rules are still getting worked out so that that will be in place. Hopefully, you know, we can get this resolved quickly because we really think that this is a great way to protect public safety and save lives.
Part of the issue, of course, was just the timeline enactment, right? In the sense of that this was voted on mid-November, implementation is supposed to go into place, I believe.
I think it was 30 days after.
Okay,
so December 8th.
Yeah, December 8th. Okay, and then of course the state basically thought that was quite funny to see the AG basically attempting to stop portions of the lawsuit because of course the state just couldn't enact it. Is that I'm just kind of curious. I'm not saying that was at least from your all's perspective that was like someone's specific doing, but was there like forethought put into that in terms of kind of that's one thing that really interests me about, well, it's not just Oregon's system, but right, really any state that can put a ballot measure together is of course that implementing any sort of government bureaucracy around, I mean, permitting basically on a massive scale. It seems like that may have been a pretty ambitious start date to have that kind of kick off a month after. But was there like concerns around that before it actually got enacted from whoever originally wrote the bill? Like, was that something that you all were talking about beforehand as something that could potentially happen?
I wasn't in on those discussions about how that 30-day timeline was set. And I'm not exactly sure. This is the first ballot measure I've really paid really close attention to. So I'm not sure how that came about. I do think it's ambitious and I do think it can be done. Other states do have permit to purchase, and the states that have that in place have seen a decrease in both homicides and gun suicides. So I think once we get it in place, it will be very beneficial.
I will just take this moment to set you to put it, get on my own soapbox and say, like, and you know, neutral to subject matter, but like the ballot initiative system is not always the best method to make policy. And you can look at things that progressives have done at the ballot measure as ballot measures and things that conservatives have successfully done at the ballot measure. But like, you know, recent examples include Measure 114 and these implementation challenges, the drug decriminalization measure that we've talked about on this podcast before, like Measure 5 that passed in the 90s that limited property taxes without really a clear plan of what we're supposed to do next. Like this is, it's hard to craft policy proposals to really complicated items with a single up or down vote for all voters. And I supported the ballot measure. I voted for it and I'm glad that it passed. But I did want to kind of ask one other question on Measure 114, which is this margin. So I've been thinking about this a little bit. So it looks here, 975,000 voted yes, 950,000 voted no. That's like 50.6% yes, 49.4% no. I'm kind of curious if you have thoughts on that margin, Hillary, and like how you're thinking about it. It was closer than I thought it would be. I think some of the initial polling had bigger margins, but what do you make of the closeness of the outcome?
It is very close. And I would love to have seen a much wider margin on that. And I think it's because a lot of people, you know, midterm elections don't usually draw the same amount of attention. So I think a lot of people misunderstood the ballot measure and a lot of people were being fed misinformation by the opposition. So I think there was a lot of opportunity for education that may have happened in a larger election year so that we could just, you know, help people understand a little better how this is designed to save lives and prevent gun violence.
Yeah. And then one thing I wanted to talk about just kind of in general was, like, for example, there, you know, as we had talked about, there's quite an increase in gun violence in Portland, and I'm assuming probably across the state in general. I mean, there's a lot of states across the country that are seeing increases in homicide, shooting, violent crimes, et cetera. That's been kind of the continuous trend over the past 2-3 years or so. In terms of, I'm just kind of curious from your perspective is, and Moms Demand Action is, you know, for example, it's very difficult to get a gun in a place like Chicago. But of course, now with new types of technology, of course, there's illegal guns, there's ghost guns and things like that. You know, because that I feel like a lot of the debate around sort of the gun regulation comes down to like the high capacity magazines, the AR-15s, the AKs and stuff like that. But I know that most gun violence is done by handguns, which, I mean, of course, you could have a handgun with a 6-round magazine, 8-round magazine or whatever. Of course, that would be totally fall within that spectrum right now. From your perspective or kind of maybe like the groups, are there policies from your end that can maybe address that? Is there like any specific focus on handguns? I just feel like that's feels like most of the debate generally is almost always around kind of like the high capacity round weapons. But of course, yeah, most gun violence is done by handguns. So just kind of curious if maybe that's something that the group is working on in the future, or if that's kind of something that you've thought about as well. Because I feel like that's generally kind of left out of the debate, at least when it kind of comes to gun safety and things like that.
Well, I think the permit to purchase will help reduce gun violence with handguns. I think there are so many guns in our country. We have more guns than people. We have more gun shops than McDonald's. It's so easy to get a gun in our country that we need to address that. And that's not going to be a quick fix. We really need to change the culture to embrace gun safety and keep guns out of the hands of people who should not be having them. And yeah, the press and the media really like to amplify or report on, you know, mass shootings and AR-15 style weapons and high capacity magazines. But really, we need to keep focus that daily gun violence in our communities is the vast majority of gun violence in our country, whether it's from gun suicide or domestic violence or, you know, any of the gun crimes that you were mentioning that have increased with handguns. So we really need to have a broad spectrum of gun safety measures in place so that we can begin to reduce gun violence in our country.
That kind of leads me to something I'm curious about for my own reasons, but also I think listeners will be interested. Hillary, do you know, have you all established a 2023 legislative agenda or any issues that you're hoping that the legislature will act on in the coming session?
Yeah, lots of bills are, you know, in draft form or just getting pulled together. But we've been talking to different legislators and different possibilities. We'd really like to see the age for almost all guns for purchase raised to 21. We think so many of the, you know, gun crimes are being perpetrated by young people, by young adults. So we'd really like to make sure that 18 to 20 year olds are not able to purchase guns, with some exceptions. You know, I mentioned my dad is a hunter, my brothers were hunters. You know, we can make exceptions for, you know, to protect family heritage and whatnot, but also save, you know, make gun sales safer. We're also looking at addressing ghost guns. There was a federal policy earlier through the Biden administration to address them, to make sure that ghost guns were labeled as guns because the pieces themselves were not classified as guns by the ATF. So we want to make sure that those are recognized as guns. But also in Oregon, it would be a great way to address ghost guns by prohibiting the sale and purchase of ghost guns in Oregon. There's also different things we can do, like extending sensitive locations to cities and counties so they can decide if they will allow guns in their city buildings and in their county fairgrounds, things like that. We also want to look at funding for violence intervention programs. That was something that we supported in the last legislative session to make sure that there is consistent funding for these community organizations who are able to reach into the places where the violence is happening so that they can have authentic voices and authentic partnerships. But they need the funding to be consistent in order to be effective. And then we're also looking at some possibilities about increasing secure storage information distribution. Possibly we've seen success in other states where their school districts send home information about secure storage so that all of the families are aware. And that's just one way to decrease unintentional shootings by children who find unsecured handguns in their home. And also decrease access by potential school shooters who most often get their guns from their home. Mm.
Quick follow-up, Alex, on that, and then I'll let you. And feel free to disagree if this is not your perception, but my perception has been like the gun safety advocacy community, which includes Moms Demand in every town, but also includes some other organizations and definitely like some legislators. There's been this conventional wisdom that we could really only do like one major gun safety bill per session and that we can't do too much too fast. You obviously just rattled off a series of proposals. I'm wondering if you think Measure 114 has like flipped the dynamics in the legislature and maybe there will be appetite to take on more gun safety issues at once. Or is that kind of how, I'm just curious what you think about that observation.
I had heard that in previous years that, you know, the legislature had appetite for one gun bill at a time. And I've seen that change. We have so many gun sense candidates who have been elected into the House and the Senate. So we know that we have gun sense champions who are ready to take more than one bill, because this, the incremental change, the incremental steps, it's great, but it's also too slow. We're not stemming the tide of gun violence at the rate that we could. Mm. So I'm hopeful and looking forward to having more than one policy put forth.
Me too.
Yeah, and and one thing I'm curious on, and I feel like there's definitely sort of left-wing, right-wing, pro-gun, gun safety kind of partisanship here, I guess is the right answer. But in terms of like illegal guns on the streets, you know, we talked about ghost guns earlier. Of course, there's a lot of just illegal firearms either run from other states. Some of them come from the southern border, right? And they make it into the hands of criminals and, of course, kill innocent people, kill each other, et cetera. What are some of kind of the measures you think that maybe even like that, you know, police could be taking or law enforcement basically to help get some of the illegal firearms off the street? Because I just know that they're, I mean, of course, it's harder said than done, but I think always a kind of fear, right, of that even for people, once something is made more restricted, it's, you know, people start to look to other avenues, of course, whether that's with drugs or any sort of other crime or whatever. I mean, of course, people already look towards those avenues with guns, even though they're fairly accessible, but any sort of kind of policy solutions there, you think, or obviously it's a really hard issue to be able to tackle, but curious of that.
It is a hard issue. And I think I mentioned earlier that Oregon is ranked 11th in the country in terms of the strength of our gun laws, but we're only as safe as our neighbor states. Mm. Idaho, for example, is 49th in their strength of their gun laws. So that's pretty close. We know that that gun trafficking is a huge deal between states. And I know the ATF has started to crack down on gun trafficking laws. So I think if we can cut down on illegal guns coming into our state, that helps a lot. In terms of what, you know, local police departments can do, it really depends on where they are. You know, we have some counties who have declared themselves to be Second Amendment sanctuaries, and that they have decided, or the local sheriff has decided that, you know, that they know better than the legislature, or that they know better than the Supreme Court, and have decided that they won't enforce gun safety laws, which I'll be frank, I think is ridiculous.
Yeah. I have my own thing about this. You raised your right hand.
I remember Ben, when we argued about, is it immigration was the other issue with this one, I think.
Yeah, it's like you raise your right hand and say, I pledge to uphold the laws and the constitution of this country. And then you have people who unilaterally are deciding what is and isn't constitutional. And it's like, actually, we have a well-defined system for determining the constitutionality of something in this in this country. And none of it is what a locally elected sheriff thinks is constitutional or not. But anyway, defend yourself, Alex.
Well, and the one question I wanted to ask Hillary, and then I think Ben will go ahead and close this, is I know part of the issue with the ghost guns has been the rise of 3D printing, which has both become, I think, a lot more popular in general for just kind of general business applications. I saw there's a company that 3D prints houses, which I thought was pretty crazy. That was an interesting article to read. Mm-hmm. But of course,
that sounds great.
It's getting a lot easier to not even just produce firearms, but I mean, produce other things, I think, that, you know, should have at least, I think you should have to at least go to the store to buy a gun, right? You shouldn't just be able to make your own at home. But, you know, how does the application or kind of things like that in terms of, obviously that should that will have probably changes in the policies that you may advocate for. And it's kind of a broader, I mean, very large question, but I mean, what are kind of those issues that are on your radar or Moms Demand Action radar for, you know, obviously you're kind of working on things like Measure 114 now, but technology will keep changing, the landscape will keep changing. So like, but you know, that I think is kind of one of those issues, but like what other sort of future issues you kind of see maybe having to address just kind of as technology starts to evolve and things like people being able to make their own guns at home might happen, so.
Yeah, people are definitely making their own guns at home, whether it's 3D printing or getting mail order kits where, like I said before, the different pieces were not labeled as a firearm until you could assemble them, you know, quite easily at home within 30 minutes with a, you know, a couple of tools. So, you know, making sure that those guns are also regulated as guns is important. As the technology changes, we need to be able to really take a look and see what will save lives. it really comes down to that. You know, what is going to keep us safe? And I think holding the gun lobby and the gun manufacturers accountable is incredibly important. You know, they have quite a bit of limited liability right now so that they can produce and market however they would like. But we need to make sure that, because what we've seen in the past is that once a regulation is set, the gun lobby or the gun manufacturers will just change the name of a part on a gun to skirt the law. So we need to make sure that however the laws are written, that they're airtight and that they can't be manipulated to, you know, find a loophole to have some new technology that would, or some new label that would skirt the safety.
Well, Hillary, we wanted to say thank you for coming on the podcast. And if there's a listener who's interested in the work that you talked about, or might maybe wants to join Moms Demand Action, where would you direct them to go?
We have a website, momsdemandaction.org, or you can simply text the word READY to the number 64433, and that will get you in the system. So you'll get invitations to our upcoming events and meetings.
Very cool. Hillary Ulick, thanks for coming on the podcast. Listeners, thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you back here next week. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.